Well, now to building a new life when your old one falls apart. Australian Jo Peck ran her own advertising agency for 35 years. She was married for 25 years. Then everything changed. After celebrating her 60th birthday at a good old knees up, her husband announced he was in love with someone else. Jo Peck has catalogued her experiences and emotions in her memoir, Suddenly Single at 60. And it also contains some practical information from her experiences of dealing with despair, divorce, and dating. Tipping your pool, your foot into the dating pool, and particularly the internet dating pool, at this stage of life. Jo's with us from Melbourne. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Bright and early it is there. Good on you. Thank you.
Yes, I'm in bed in my pyjamas, so it's lucky you can't see me.
Thank you for sharing. let's begin where the story begins and the element of shock that naturally accompanies this situation. This is the 60th birthday, but even before the 60th birthday party, you sort of knew something was up, right? There's a sixth sense in operation, would you say?
Yes, I would. I hadn't quantified it in any specific way, but as you know, if you've read the book, my husband suffered from depression. So I just thought we were going through a bad patch, and I was optimistic that that would pass. So I hadn't ever thought that it had anything to do with our relationship. I just thought it was part of the ups and downs of our marriage.
There's a particular moment, and I have read the book, Jo, but I'm just trying to recall the particular moment where he fesses up, if you like, and this is often what happens. Like, it can be a burden, actually, for the other person. But there's a moment where this confession happens, it's said, and it's almost like that before and after moment in one's life, isn't it? There's no taking that moment back.
No question. It was just a completely innocent moment. It was a Saturday morning. We were going into the city to buy a present for our godson. And I suggested that we might, you know, look at buying a new TV or look at a new TV while we're in the city. And my husband had a very violent outburst saying that we didn't need a new TV and why was I so needy and, you know, I seem to be never satisfied these days. And that outburst came completely out of the blue and it just was so violent. It caused me to burst into tears. And he said to me, "What are you crying for? It's only a TV." And then I took a breath and I said, "Somehow I don't think this is only about a TV." And then the room went quiet and he said, "I'm seeing someone else." And at that point, my world collapsed.
You asked the second question, or the first question I think so many people ask in these situations.
Do you love her? Yes, I did. And the answer to that was, yes, I do. And then, you know, that double whammy of rejection and betrayal just totally floors you, and you realise that life as you knew it is over. You know, it's been napalmed. Your life no longer exists.
There is a humour throughout this book, and this is it's one of the joys of the way you've written it.
Thank you.
But it also kind of, I'm not sure if it's a pain management method as well. She's a young woman at the time. She's 34. She's in the bowling club, for God's sake. And so straight away, I find myself empathising with you. Like, what are you doing in the bowling club at 34? Like, you know, go and get a young person's kind of situation. But
clubbing or something? No, really.
So this way of managing, and later, infamously, you buy the bloody biggest TV you can lay your hands on when you get your own digs, right? Yes. So this mix of humour and pain, was that not only a writing style, was it also in some ways how you coped?
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there. I had to. It's my natural proclivity anyway to see the funny side of something. And if I couldn't find that humour in this situation and share it with my friends, I wouldn't have got through. It was definitely a coping mechanism. And we had a lot of jibes at, you know, at the expense of my husband about, you know, what a cliche he was and, you know, how embarrassing and how could he do that? And, you know, if you could remove yourself from it, it was actually a funny situation, but not funny to be one of the people at the centre of it, really.
Who did you turn to? Who was vital in those first hours, days, weeks, months?
I'm really fortunate in that I have a lot of very, very good friends. But there was a particular couple that my husband and I and this couple spent a lot of time with. We travelled together. We had dinner together. We were family for each other. And, you know, they were as shocked by the news as I was. So naturally I turned to them and they were there for me. They had seen the cracks in our marriage and they had seen the way that, you know, my husband treated me, which was not always that well. So they took me in. They had a beautiful house. They had a spare bedroom and I was welcome to stay there with them for as long as it took for me to sort of find my feet. And they were instrumental, but not only them, all my friends rallied around me and really, you know, nurtured me and helped me through that very, very difficult time.
There's the immediate shock and pain and discombobulation. Then there's the looking forward. We might talk a little bit more about your marriage because it had been one where there'd been a lot of travel and a lot of adventure. That was a shared interest, and that was supposed to be the future upon retirement, right? And then there's the financial side of this, which got pretty nasty as well.
Yes, it did. So, look, my husband and I had always had that idea that our life would be built around travel and adventure, and neither of us were particularly interested in being parents, and that comes from a whole lot of issues from our previous lives. But we just thought we would dedicate ourselves to working hard, being able to retire and then just take off and travel the world without agenda and without, you know, really without financial burden because, you know, that's what our whole life savings had been dedicated to. So to have that taken away and then to have to fight for my share of that money just added insult to injury.
But again, we have these moments where there'll be shared experiences for so many people, but kind of moments where the humour comes through, sardonic humour at times. Like, you know, I hope you're enjoying my bed, my house, my this, my that. For yes. Anyone who's going through or recently been through, there will be some shared kind of shared moments in this, that's for sure. But what happens also is that, and this is what the book becomes ultimately, what is life after? And it's in part a reflection on the life of a relationship and relationship dynamics. Going back, you got together comparatively young. Going back, you'd split before, much earlier in your relationship when you'd bought a house together. And you're also honest that this wasn't the first time in the relationship anyway that some infidelity had made its way into things. And, you know, that is not an unusual life course for a relationship. But when you began to reflect on that life course, what became apparent to you?
Look, it became apparent to me that perhaps we didn't have the kind of glue or the compatibility that really keeps people together. Our relationship was built on high times, good times. And I just think maybe it lacked that basic cooperation and, you know, the nitty-gritty of, you know, sharing and loving each other in a deep way. I think it comes across in the book too that it was quite a competitive relationship. And you know, it was it, it, I was living with a man who I describe as precarious, and he had highs and lows, and during the lows, I became virtually invisible in that relationship. And it was, you know, during that time, one of those bad times that, you know, it was me who strayed, and it was because I was getting attention, much needed attention from someone else. And it felt to me like, well, if my husband didn't see me or didn't need me or didn't want me at that time, there was someone who did. And you know, I was never one. I never wanted to be an unfaithful wife, but at that time, it just felt like comfort and companionship, and it was what I needed. So yes, I fell for the trap of having an affair. But you know, as you know, we got through that. We got through a number of difficult, rocky times, and I think that was because we had this bond that we had both come from families where, you know, our parents died young, and we were quite dependent on each other, perhaps not in a healthy way. But yeah, it all imploded in the end. And you know, I don't know how much I should go on, but I realize now that it wasn't a truly deep, loving relationship, because I know what that feels like now because I'm in one.
We'll get to that, I promise. There's a moment when you meet with your ex-husband, actually, some ways down the track, and there's an honesty in his answers to your questions. And was that a key moment for you, getting beyond the legal fight over the house and whose share was whom, and you know, someone else being in your bed and you're in a rental somewhere? Was that a key moment in finally saying, right, got to draw some kind of a line under this?
It sure was. I really, really needed that meeting. And I think probably he did too, because, you know, our relationship was not all bad. And I think neither of us really understood why it ended. I mean, there are obvious reasons, but this time I didn't fight to go back. And I had spent a lot of time trying to work out what had gone wrong. And it was interesting at that meeting for him, to be honest, to say, you know, I did ask him the question, you know, I had this burning question to want to know, are you happy? And he said, his answer was, I can't afford regret. And to me, that was kind of, you know, that's as much as he could say in the situation he was in, but it gave me some validation for the way I felt that, you know, he possibly made a mistake that he regretted, and he had moved into a place where there was really no comeback. And it was lovely for us to be able to acknowledge that there was fault on both sides, but that we had really shared some lovely times. And, you know, I was able to walk away from that feeling like I had closure, like I understood that my feelings about him and why our relationship had finished were valid. And it was a very validating experience. And it was like, as you say, ruling a line under that relationship and being able to bank it and say, well, there were good times, there were bad times, but now I move on.
Jo Peck is our guest. Her book is Suddenly Single at 60, a memoir. You're listening to 9 to Noon with Catherine Ryan. 21 minutes past 10 it is on 9 to Noon. You move back into wanting to date. And actually, the first experiences aren't necessarily dating experiences. I don't know who your massage therapist is, but I wouldn't mind the business card if you don't mind, Jo.
You're not the first person to ask either.
We should say nothing. Nothing professionally inappropriate has happened, but
No,
the massage therapist was clearly a very relaxing and skilled
yeah,
operator.
practitioner.
But actually moving back into dating, you getting to the sort of the online scene at this age, when the last time you dated was, you know, I don't think we had telephones stuck to the wall back then.
Yes.
You had a very positive experience of it. And can you just say more? Was part of it the attitude going in, actually?
Look, I can only comment from my point of view, but yes, I did have a very positive experience with online dating because it was this whole new world, a new way of being able to meet people, which didn't require you to, you know, you didn't have to get dressed up, you didn't have to go to a bar, you didn't have to sort of look, you were able to audition before you even spoke to somebody. So that to me was just a revelation. And, you know, you had this like pack of cards that you could flick through and think, oh, yeah, he looks okay, he looks okay, he looks okay. Oh, no, not him. So it was a wonderful tool. I was terrified of going there. But once I embraced it, I found it really, really interesting and I became hooked. I really became hooked. And, you know, I'm lucky because I had no negative experiences. I only had positive experiences with the people I met. And I didn't, you know, I was selective and I didn't, you know, go with anyone who looked like they might be sus. But just for me, that ability to have connection and communication and a bit of, you know, fun banter with people who are out there in cyberspace. You don't have to meet them, but I had some really fun text communication with people who are, you know, from all walks of life. I talked to, you know, someone who was a canine dentist. I talked to someone who, you know, was a journalist from Stockholm who was here doing a story. And I met someone who had been a manager for the Rolling Stones. So, you know, there's a world of people out there, interesting people, who you can find online.
What do you think made the difference? I'm wondering if it's because age isn't necessarily the dictator in whether you swipe left or right, but I'm wondering it's because if you are in a generation, it can seem to be such a challenging area, dating full stop and sexual relationships full stop for younger women these days in particular. And we can have our theories on why that is. But do you think you were looking around in a generation with different attitudes or different stage of life and what they were looking for? Was it the way you set your profile up and made decisions, do you think?
One of the things I've learned about aging is that it comes with a whole different set of values. And I am a much more confident person than I was when I was young. In fact, I think if I was young, I would have been not good at online dating because you don't know yourself as well and you don't know what you are looking for or what you need. But, you know, at this time of your life, you are much more, you know yourself better. You know what's going to make you happy. You know exactly what you don't want as well. And, I set up a profile that was not about me, but it was about what I wanted from a man and a relationship. And I set a list of six criteria, you know, funny, smart, active, good emotional intelligence, a couple of others. And I said, you need to be at least 4 out of 6 of those things or don't bother responding. Well, that turned out to be a great strategy because it gave those people a way in, something to talk about. And it was, you know, it was also a really good weeding out tool because it just meant that people who weren't able to deal with that didn't engage with me. So it was a great way to set up a profile.
You did have an interesting, I think it was the Rolling Stones dude who, there was something of an open relationship with his partner that was part of this. But we must come to Edwin, not his real name, I presume. This was the first time where you went, oops, I'm in trouble here. But it's also, as it unfolds, it's also a story of needing to accept things that aren't necessarily exactly what you would put in the box to tick. And that was a first experience for many, many, many years, right?
I love that you picked up on that because, yes, I met Edwin and he was completely different from the kind of men I'm normally attracted to. So I normally go for the A-type personality, you know, the confident, gregarious, you know, life of the party kind of guy. And, you know, that had not served me well. So I had to broaden my criteria and broaden my views of what kind of man might be a good partner for me. And, you know, Edwin was not, he was not flash. He was not, you know, our conversation was wonderful, but it didn't flow that easily. But there was something about him. I sensed his authenticity and I sensed his kindness. And those two things were something that I had not been used to. And so I really wanted to explore that further to see, you know, could I change, you know, could I change my criteria to be with a man, not the man I thought I wanted, but to let in a man I needed, the sort of man who would nurture me and look after me, and that we could have an equal and, you know, loving relationship. And it turned out that Edwin was that man. And it took a lot of getting used to because, you know, I, as I say, I was the high priestess of the High Wire Act, and everything in my life up until then had been, you know, walking on eggshells and riding roller coasters. And suddenly I'd found a man who was constant and steady and there for me, and who had a default position of yes rather than no. And it was absolutely eye-opening for me. And, you know, I just realised how bad my choices had been in the past in terms of, you know, finding someone who was going to be right for me.
There's no bad choices, Jo. There's just a life lived.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
It is true.
Otherwise, you'd be sitting here telling me that you split up with this nice, steady man you married at 20 because you were bored out of your tree, right? So, and you never did all the things you wanted to do. But it's no spoiler alert, because we're left where we are in the book. Where are things at now?
Well, Edwin and I live together in a beautiful apartment that we share in South Melbourne. We're incredibly happy. He's out walking the dog while I'm taking this call. And, you know, our life is without drama, but it's just filled with love. And I couldn't be happier.
Who's this for?
And sorry?
Who's this for ultimately in the book? It's for you, first and foremost, right? You've written a memoir. But who do you have in mind in sharing this experience?
Look, as the book progressed and I realised I was writing something that would be relatable for a lot of women because, boy, I can't tell you how many people have said to me, I've had that experience. My details are different, but I was left at 40 or 50, or I have a friend who's going through exactly that situation. And I think a lot of women find it very confronting. And, you know, it's also very a difficult time to get through because you lose your sense of identity, you lose your sense of self. And it takes a lot to rebuild that. So I want to offer women out there the idea that life doesn't end when your relationship ends. In fact, it gives you an opportunity for a wonderful new beginning. Of course, you have to do the analysis. You have to go through that grief process. But what I would say is don't get stuck there. Make sure you move on. Make sure you give yourself an opportunity to reinvent yourself or to have a better life because, yeah, that loss is horrible, but it can also be transformational. And, you know, I just want women to know that there's hope out there.
Thank you. Jo Peck, her memoir's called Suddenly Single at 60.